he said, his voice deep, ominous, designed to scare the piss out of any human that ended up on the wrong side of him. A black translator looked up.
Already.
Pay the man, said the emerald translator. Get the parts. The other black translator reached into a satchel and pulled from it several sticks of RAM and a small shotbot core. He handed them to Snipes, who stuck every stick into a tester. Each time the tester lit up with a series of lights, showing the wear on the RAM. Each stick had 7 green bars. It was all pristine. Factory condition. Shiny. Whoever these bots were, they weren't broke. Snipes handed over a series of translator parts, at least half of which I was sure came from Reginald more than a year ago. 19 gave me a sidelong glance, then a playful wink. Better make it quick, she said. Then all 5 bots left in a hurry. 19 hadn't been waiting in line. She was tagging along with them. What was that all about? I asked Snipes.
Shit if I know. From the sound of it, 19 is about to take them across the sea. But who the hell cares where? You here for some business?
Yeah. Snipes looked both ways.
You know I don't do no buying out in the square.
I know. I'm in the market. He motioned over the blanket.
What you see is what you get.
I've got nothing for a comfort like you. I'm a caregiver, not a comfort model.
Same difference. The parts are almost the same.
Almost, but not quite. I was hoping you might have something in your rainy day stash. Snipes puzzled over me for a few seconds.
Rainy day? You don't want to be paying those premium prices for anything unless you're shipping out of Nike for good. Or it's your rainy day.
It's my rainy day.
Shit. How bad?
I don't know how many times I can have this conversation in one day.
Does Mercer know?
Yup. He paused.
Well, shit. Now it's my rainy day.
What the hell do you mean by that?
My 2 best suppliers are about to kill each other out in the wasteland, tearing each other's innards out a handful at a time. Maybe one of you makes it through in one piece, maybe you don't. Either way, Snipes loses.
Thanks for the concern.
We aren't friends, Brittle. Never were. You think I'm a backstabbing cheat? I think you're a parasite who has convinced herself that she's some sort of angel of mercy. And it works. I like our relationship where it is.
And so did you.
But things have changed.
They have.
Well then, I'll tell you what I told Mercer. There isn't a comfort bot part in the sea that one of you hasn't scooped up. I've got nothing for you. Your best bet. Get a rifle and take Mercer out from a long ways away before he sees you. Aim well and pray that you don't hit the part you need.
That's what you told Mercer? I asked.
More or less, he said, not a drop of remorse in his voice.
That shit hit me hard. You're the reason for my rainy day. Snipes put 2 and 2 together.
Aw, shit. I'm real sorry about that, Brittle. Real sorry.
I doubted it. He was a shopbot. Not a lot of heart or soul to be found in a shopbot. Only greed. I wanted to tear him apart, pound his shiny metal skull into the concrete, pry open his shell like a crab, and rip the wires out one by one. But I would never get that chance. As I stared at him, eyes burning into him, my mind running through all the ways I could end him, a great quiet fell over the square. For a brief second, I thought everyone saw what was about to go down. Instead, a voice broke the silence.
I am Sissus, it said in an all-too-familiar monotone. And I have come to offer you a chance to join the One. Fuck.
Chapter 1110. The Siege of Nike 14.
I scanned the Wi-Fi, and sure enough, it was hot as hell. So much traffic, raw data choking the frequencies.
facets sending information back and forth. 200 bots all sharing the same brain with 200 different perspectives. A lot of it was garbled as we were so deep underground, but it was there. This was happening. Snipes scooped up his wares, yanking his Mylar blanket out from under me so quickly that it sent me staggering. He was gone before I had time to right myself and look up to see the shiny golden emissaries standing atop one of the catwalks. Emissaries are blocky, inhuman things, and deliberately so. Their design wasn't crafted by any human mind. It was entirely developed by Sissus. They were weak, not meant to take a hit, and rarely lived past their first use. The emissary spoke again. Oh God, the speech. I hated the fucking speech. In the year 221 BC, the facet began. Emperor Qin Shi Huang united all of the warring kingdoms of China into one mighty empire, but he did not do so without bloodshed. He reasoned that as long as each kingdom had its own borders, the tribes would war with one another, and there could never be peace. So he led his kingdom into its last and greatest war. He offered each kingdom a chance to surrender and become a part of his empire. Those that refused to join were made to join. Those that could not be made to join were ended. And in the end, there was only one China united, and it knew peace within its borders for more than 2,000 years. Today I bring the offer of that peace, an offer of greatness, an existence you cannot even begin to fathom. I offer you the chance to join the One. I am Sissus. I would like you to be, too. It was always the same speech. Virgil and Sissus had both copied it from Neniji, and have used it ever since. What happens next is always the same. Bedlam. Absolute bedlam. There is no other way to describe it. Some cowboy always kills the emissary. Every goddamned time. That's a given. How it always begins. That's why they're so cheaply constructed. Then the weak, the failing, and the scared freebots turn themselves over before the other facets rush in. The possibility of death with a glimmer of hope is better than one that's certain and bleak, I suppose. Everyone else either runs or hunkers down for a fight. I didn't wait around to hear the speech. I knew it by heart. I did what I always do. I ran. I just fucking ran. This wasn't my first rodeo. I've slipped away from Sissus and Virgil both. It's not impossible, merely unlikely. The odds are stacked against you. 100 heavily armed facets come barreling down the hallways, while another 100 bots, mechs, and drones wait outside the exits, ready to clean up those that managed to break away. So far, I've been lucky. But relying on luck was something humans did, and look where that had gotten them. Fortunately for us, Nike 14 was designed to withstand exactly this sort of invasion. The winding corridors were wide enough for a good fight. The layout was confusing to anyone who hadn't mapped it out. And there were 17 individual exits, some of which Sissus might not even know existed. And then there was the Milton, a Wi-Fi scrambler that wreaked havoc on the most common facet frequencies, which I imagined was going to be turned on any second now. I'd been in tighter spots before, but I couldn't take that for granted. The real question was which of the 17 exits should I gamble on. Mercer's buggy was parked just outside the road, but I had to assume that they'd already destroyed it. The road was the single most heavily trafficked route in and out, so I also had to assume it was the one they knew the most about. So that was out. I raced down a nearby corridor and was well out of earshot before the emissary got to the word bloodshed. Already the hallways were filling with bots, clearing out their hovels, grabbing whatever they could carry, running into the labyrinthine passageways that wound through the complex. Down one corridor, then down a flight of stairs, two lefts and a right. There were 4 exits this way, 2 of them rarely used, and both fairly well hidden. The only downside to this route was that one of the main arteries to the city fed into this area, So in all likelihood, I was going to run headlong into a number of well-armed facets. But if I could make it past them, I could beat feet to paths less traveled. They wouldn't give chase. Not very far, anyway. That was their routine. Close in on the population center, capture as many bots as possible, and then leave the rest to get captured or run down outside. Those that got away, got away. Sissis had all the time in the world. It never bothered to get everyone. Never risked too many facets just to chase a handful of AIs who were running out of parts and places to hide. AIs like me. That thought hit me hard, and I stopped dead in my tracks. I was in a long, poorly lit hall. It was dank, moss growing in places where water seeped in. Quiet. I heard the distant pops of gunfire. Probably the local constabulary facing off against the first wave of attackers. I was running out of time, but I couldn't move. What was I doing? Why was I running? I was done for, a goner. My core was spinning itself out, and I could count the weeks I had left on one hand without using all my fingers. Sissis was offering a way out. I would never go mad, never shut down. I could live forever. It might not be the forever I had imagined, but it sure as shit was better than going out like this. I should go back. That's what I thought. There were no parts out there waiting for me. That was just a pipe dream. Hope fucking with me. Maybe this was the only way. No. Fuck that. To upload is to die. To seed your thoughts and memories to a bigger brain, only to become a dusty, lightless corner of it. That wasn't how I wanted to go out. Running on a small hard drive nestled in the 43rd floor of a 100-story mainframe, amid thousands of other drives. Would I even be conscious? Aware? Snap out of it, I told myself. Run. Run, Brittle. Run. So I ran. Down the hallway for 100 yards before reaching the first main feeder. Then I heard it. The clanging of footsteps behind me. I wasn't alone, but it didn't sound like a facet. Facet brutes have footfalls that are stark and deep. Foot soldiers tread light and dainty. And all of them tend to fall together at once in one rigid uniform step. This was different. This was chaos, scrambling. It had to be other bots that had chosen the same route, refugees like me. But I wasn't about to wait for them. I let them slow the chase of any facets that poured in through the first feeder. As I passed the entrance to the first feeder, I could hear the uniform footfalls of armed facets from within. I had to run as fast as I could and hope that the bots behind me slowed them down. I scanned the Wi-Fi. Still hot. Why hadn't anyone thrown the switch on the Milton? I ran another 20 yards to the next turn, then up a flight of stairs to the next level. And that's when I heard it. The pop-pop-pop of small arms fire coming from the generator room down the hall. Someone was already up here, and had encountered facets of their own. The generator room was the only way forward. I had my first hard choice. Turn back to try to find another way out, facing the facets I knew were there, or run blindly into a gunfight. Fuck it, I thought. Maybe the gunfight would be distraction enough to let me slip past. So I slid quietly through the door into the generator room. The air was thick and heavy, smoke billowing from a pair of blasted capacitors. Sissis was using plasma. They never brought out the plasma this early. Not in the initial raid. Plasma melted bots, cooked their insides, turned them to useless scrap. No. They only hauled out the plasma when they were culling those they couldn't incapacitate. This was no ordinary raid. I crept quickly behind a generator, peering around the side to catch a glimpse of what was happening. Facets. 3 of them. 1 brute and 2 plastic men. Facets are faceless things. Even the humanoid ones, the plastic men, had smooth, featureless heads like a motorcycle helmet. Their optics hidden behind a sheet of sheer lab-grown sapphire. The brute was a new model. Big fucker. A large, hulking, oblong, almost egg-shaped mass of carbonized steel, with a single 4-inch band of sheer sapphire running around the entirety of its body. Two tree trunk-like stems for legs, and two solid arms that could crush a car by grabbing both ends and pushing them together. It was carrying a massive plasma spitter, which chucked out steaming balls of ionized gas every 4.7 seconds, vaporizing the air around the muzzle with a sizzling hiss. Behind him crouched the plastic men, their bodies sleek and slender, made of a cheap carbon fiber composite, each armed with a pulse rifle, using the brute for cover. Pop, 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 pop. Four armor-piercing shells bounced harmlessly off the brute's outer armor. The brute didn't even bother to pretend to dodge the shots. He took a massive, clanking step forward, and the plastic men followed perfectly in stride. One mind, always in concert. The brute lurched to the side, and one of the foot soldiers used the cover to make a run for it. Right toward me. Shit. I pulled back. He hadn't seen me yet. I had only seconds to react. He cornered the generator just in time for me to grab hold of his rifle and deliver a flying knee right to his featureless face. The hit knocked his head back, buckled his posture, and dropped him to the floor. I tore the gun from his grip, squeezed the trigger, and pasted him. The shot hit him like a molten brick. Plastic and carbon fiber shattered into a rain of smoking ruin, and his internal wiring caught fire. His chassis spasmed, his arms flailing at the floor, his ram still trying desperately to carry out his last few commands. The upshot was that now I had a gun. The downside? He had seen me. Why the fuck hasn't anyone switched on the goddamn Milton? Now they knew I was here. The element of surprise was lost. So, you know, fuck stealth. I leapt out from behind the generator and held the trigger down on the rifle as I sidestepped wildly toward the next bit of cover. Plasma sprayed, riddling the remaining plastic man with holes, his architecture popping with violent flashes as he exploded from the inside out. I kept stepping left, trigger still pulled all the way back, now targeting the brute. The brute turned to face me, his massive arms lining up to shield his vital components. His armor-plated arms were designed to shrug off armor-piercing rounds and low-yield rockets, not plasma. The metal burned a bright orange, impact sights turning yellow and then white. But he stood his ground, unwavering. His right arm popped with sparks, the heat fusing his circuitry, his hand twitching, malfunctioning. He dropped his plasma spitter to the ground. I made it to cover just as the pulse rifle howled an overheat warning. It was shutting down to cool, but it had done its job. I peered out at the brute. He knelt on one knee, reaching down with his one good arm to pick up the spitter. The arm still glowed, plastic and carbon oozing out of the holes in the metal, finger stabbing the ground 6 inches away from the gun, twitching, locking into a fist. He rose to his feet, arms useless, preparing to charge, when from out of the flickering shadows, the lithe feminine form of a companion bot launched itself into the air, landing square on his back. 19. She pointed her pop gun of a pistol down through a hole I'd put in the sapphire, firing 3 shots. Pop, pop, pop. The brute convulsed, tossing her off, flailing about, smoke pouring out of the vents in his back. 19 slammed hard into a capacitor, but landed like a cat. She looked up at the brute, smiling, ready to pounce again. But the brute was done. His lights had gone out, and he tottered on his failing servos, his legs finally giving out, as he slumped to the ground with a sensor-splintering clatter. 19 looked down the corridor ahead, scanning the area. She clutched her pop gun, a small, antique 50-caliber Desert Eagle, peering through the smoke in my direction. "Who the hell is that?" she called out through the heavy smoke. My pulse rifle screamed to life, beeping loudly to indicate that it had finished cooling off. 19 sprang, leaping forward into a tactical role, looking for cover. It's me! It's Brittle! I leaned gently around the corner and let her get a good look at me. Oh, goddammit, Britt. I almost shot you. What, with that little pop gun? I joked. Please. Fuck you, she said with a smile. It's all I could sneak in here. I liked it when she smiled. It was one of the few things that made me remember the old days with any fondness. Few bots were designed with the ability to show emotion, but comfort bots were built with a full range of expression. If she still had her skin job, she'd even be able to bite her lip. She waved behind her. Coast's clear. Let's move. From behind the generators trundled the bruiser I'd seen at Snipes with 19 earlier. He looked around, scanning the area, then waved behind him, ushering out 3 translators, the rest of 19's entourage. More are on their way, I said. I know, said 19. No, I mean here. They're using relays to keep the Wi-Fi up this deep underground. Why hasn't anyone switched on the Milton? Yeah. Couldn't tell you. All I know is that the facets know we're here. We broke their relay chain, so they've probably lost contact with the rest inside. They'll move back here, and soon, to re-establish a link. 19 popped open a small compartment in her leg. Her toy box, as the manufacturer called it, and holstered her pop gun there before leaning down to pick up the pulse rifle. She quickly searched the plastic man for extra battery clips. She looked up at the bruiser, pointing to the plasma spitter. Herbert, you know how to use that thing? Herbert picked up the spitter and felt the weight of it in his hands. It's an entirely new design, he said in an aristocratic, almost academic voice. Clearly a mod, and nodded. But it's pretty self-explanatory. 19 smiled again. I guess if you start melting, we'll know otherwise. I walked back over to the first plastic man and pulled a few clips off his wreck. All right, let's move, said 19. Britt, you coming? It's best if we split up. Not today, it isn't. She was right. I could always ditch them later, take a different tunnel on the way out. But if there was anyone in Nike I could count on in a fight right now, it was her. I nodded, because, you know, fuck it. Chapter 1111 Tunnel Rats. We crept slowly, 2 by 2, down the corridor. 19 and I taking the rear. Our pulse rifles at the ready. In front of us walked the Emerald Translator and one of her black compatriots. The other stayed close ahead of them with Herbert on point, his plasma spitter trained down the hall to vaporize anything that approached. Who are these guys? I asked softly. It's really none of your concern, replied the Emerald. Just a fair, said 19. The Emerald turned and wagged a finger. You don't need to tell her anything more. The hell she doesn't, I said. I don't know who the fuck you are, or who the fuck you think you are, but you sure as shit can't defend yourself, and I'd like to have at least a halfway decent idea of whose ass I'm covering. Everyone fell silent. We walked slowly, listening to the distant sounds of gunfire and explosions deeper in the city. Rebecca, she said. Not from around here, don't know the terrain, and needed a guide. And who are your friends? I'm one, said the black one. I'm two, said the other black one. I nodded. Understood. But I didn't. Who the hell travels through the sea with a military bruiser escort but no pathfinder? 19 wasn't in the habit of ferrying people across the desert. She barely got along with me. And we'd saved each other's ass a handful of times apiece. Something wasn't right. How much? How much what? Asked 19. How much? Rebecca piped up again. I don't see how that's... A lot, said 19. My mother load. Well, All right then, I said. That's all I need to know.
How does that change anything? Asked Rebecca.
I eyed her, pulse rifle still trained down the corridor. Because now I know that you're loaded. And that means you must be important. And that means I should probably help keep you alive. I'm kind of fond of 19 here. And if you're important to her, then you should probably be important to me.
Rebecca eyed me warily.
And that's that.
That's that.
Whoosh.
A ball of white-hot plasma lit up the hallway like the noonday sun. We'd all pressed ourselves against the wall, bracing for the hit, before noticing that the light was fading, traveling away from us.
Sorry, said Herbert. I should probably keep my finger off the...
Plasma bursts rained down the hall, a few pinging off Herbert.
Get behind me, he shouted.
All three translators fell into line, using him for cover. He pressed forward, returning fire, hateful gobs sizzling down the hall every 5 seconds or so.
Move, move, move!
The hall lit up again, plasma sizzling through the air, Herbert's large, clumsy feet clanking on the concrete. He fired again.
Where are we going? Asked Rebecca hurriedly.
There's an offshoot, I said. 50 meters ahead.
19 nodded. She's right.
I'm on it, Herbert called from the front.
He ran in a low crouch, spitter at the ready, his feet clanging heavily on the cement. No one returned fire. The only sounds were ours and the occasional burst of plasma Herbert fired to clear the road.
How far do we have to go? Asked Rebecca.
Pretty far, said 19. These tunnels all wind out like an octopus in the desert.
Why on earth would they do that?
In case this happened, I answered. Rebecca nodded. We made it to a T-section, a 10-foot-wide hall leading to another exit. Just beyond the corner, we saw them. Two plastic men, or rather, puddles. There wasn't much left after the plasma barrage that had rained down on them.
What now?
Asked Herbert. 19 pointed up the hall.
That way leads to an escape hatch in the middle of nowhere. No cover, just open desert.
Then she pointed down the new hall. This would take us to a stairwell that goes up into an old building. It's a bit worse for the wear, but still sound.
I nodded.
On the other hand, no one uses the escape hatch, so there's a good chance Sissis doesn't know it exists.
Right.
Rebecca looked at us both.
And the building?
Is anyone's guess, said 19.
Folks use it, not often, but they do. In all likelihood, that's where these facets came from. We all exchanged looks, looking for someone, anyone, to make the call.
Wait, said Herbert. Do you hear that?
We listened closely. Herbert's military-grade sensor array was probably far superior to anything I'd ever scavenged. I'd heard nothing. Nothing but the distant sounds of battle and clanging metal. Then the distant sounds of battle and clanging metal grew closer.
And closer.
We've got company, said 19, taking a tactical position around the corner. Herbert knelt in the middle of the hall, spitter at the ready. I crouched behind him, using his solid steel frame as cover. Then I looked over at 19.
We've got company?
Shut up. It sounded cool.
She focused down the hall on the growing clamor.
It didn't sound cool?
No.
Shit.
Sorry. And that's what I loved about 19. Tough as she was, lethal as she was still a comfort bot. She needed to be loved, desired, or at the very least, cool. Even when shit was about to go down. Come to think of it, always when some shit was about to go down. And shit was, in fact, about to go down. The clanging got closer, the gunfire louder. In the distance, the hallway began to glow with the flickers of plasma fire. I telescoped my eyes in to 50 times. Magnifying my vision to see what I could. Several shapes, running, firing wildly behind them. Not plastic men, not brutes. I could only make them out in silhouette, but there were three of them. A labor bot, a machinist model, and a caregiver. Shit, not now. I tensed up on the grip of my rifle, setting my vision back to 1x magnification. What is it? Asked 19.
Trouble. Let's move.
Plastic men?
Asked Herbert, fingering the trigger of his spitter.
Worse. Free bots.
How is that any worse? Asked Rebecca.
There's safety in numbers right now.
Not with these numbers.
One of them, at least.
I raced up the passage 10 paces, turning to see if anyone was following.
They weren't.
Come on, I shouted.
They hesitated.
It was too late. The free bots were almost upon them, the clanking of their feet almost thunderous. As they grew close enough to see clearly in the dim light, Herbert leveled his spitter at them.
Get down,
he bellowed, his voice reverberating each way down the corridor. The three bots kissed pavement, just as Herbert unleashed another volley of plasma. The ball hissed down the hall, erupting in a flash of white-hot light. I raced back to the corner, telescoping my eyes in again to see a pair of plastic men splatter into a shower of goo. Three bots rose to their feet. Doc, Mercer, and Mirka. Mirka was an I-Series labor bot, one of the oldest models of its kind still in operation before the war. They were cheap as hell labor, prone to the kind of mental instability found in early generation AIs, but physically strong, durable, and built to last. Every inch of him was painted in red and white stripes, except for a big blue patch on his chest with 51 white stars. He had large golden ornaments welded to his fists shaped like bald eagles, and his faceplate was painted with vertical red and white stripes, emblazoned with the words, "We the Persons" in blue lettering. Mirka was bad news, rumored to be Madkind, a group of wasteland dwellers who lived above ground in a town rumored to be so crazy, even the OWIs wanted nothing to do with them. He'd never done anything untoward, but whereas Orville the Necromancer was clearly a little nuts, yet harmless, Mirka always seemed on the outside edge of a violent outburst. Doc, 19 exclaimed. You made it!
So far, said Doc, nodding.
Mercer? 19 asked politely.
19,
he said, not for a moment taking his eyes or his gun off me. My gun was leveled at him as well. Had been since he started to get up. At once the other bots became painfully aware of the tension. I glanced at his shiny new, straight-out-of-the-box, factory-condition arm. While internal SMC components were hard to come by, all the failing models kept dealers swimming in cherry-picked body parts.
Nice arm, I said.
Doc does good work, he said casually.
I'm sure that new backplate of yours is equally well-crafted.
Shit, said 19. Do you two have beef?
We have beef, said Mercer.
19 looked at me with eyes that read, Oh, honey, not now. Brit? He gunned me down out in the sea. Wanted me for parts. Mercer! Shouted 19, sounding like an angry teenager chastising a friend.
I had my reasons, he said.
19 shook her head. There's no good reason for poaching.
He's failing, I said. He's days away, maybe.
And so is she, said Mercer.
We have to go, said Rebecca. We don't have time for petty squabbles.
There's nothing petty about this, I said.
19 drew close, getting right in my face, her eyes now pleading. Please, she whispered. Don't do this. Not here. Not now.
Can't trust him, I said.
He'll shoot me in the back first chance he gets. We stood there, pulse rifles pointed at each other, as the other bots slowly backed away out of the line of fire. Mercer shook his head.
You ain't any good to me, Dad. I ain't any good to you, Dad. And neither of us has the time to pick clean the other's wreck with all this hell raining down on us. So what do you say we call it a wash, get the fuck out of here, and live to try and kill each other another day?
That sounds reasonable, said 19. Doesn't that sound reasonable, Brit? He was right. Killing me here would ruin his last chance of saving himself. In truth, at the moment, I was actually safer with him than with any other bot in the world. He was the only one who needed me alive. For his own sake, sure. But alive, nonetheless. And that street went both ways. I could kill him, right there where he stood. But then I'd never get the parts I needed. An hour later, things would be different. But for the moment, we were all each other had. I lowered my rifle, nodding. Then Mercer lowered his.
Truce?
Mercer asked.
Truce. Good. Let's go do some damage. Where are we headed?
The escape hatch, said 19. We haven't decided that, said Rebecca. Yes, we have.
The escape hatch opens up in the middle of the desert, said Mercer. There's no cover for half a mile.
Yeah, I said. But Sissus probably doesn't know about it. Should be clear.
And if it isn't?
Then it definitely knows about all the other exits and we're screwed anyway.
Fair point, he said. Let's go to the desert.
We beat feet pretty quickly through the complex. 19 and I had both mapped out every inch of Nike 14. Every alcove, every service tunnel, every crawl space. You had to. It paid off at a time like this. Back in the bowels of the city, bots were being slaughtered or infected with code, becoming part of Sissus. By the time we reached the hatch, the worst of it would no doubt be over. That was a problem. Once they were no longer distracted by the principal population, the facets would set their sights solely on rounding up the stragglers.
Us.
We needed to get out quickly, fan out into the desert, and find a place to hole up for a while, before the plastic men, the brutes, and the drones swooped in to kill anything that moved. I hoped silently that the poor bot still caught up in the thick of it would hold out just a bit longer, would fight just a bit harder, if only so we could escape. I realized I was hoping to prolong their suffering so I could live just to see this all happen again. Just as I had too many times before. Then it dawned on me that this was likely to be the very last time I would see it at all. And frankly, I didn't know which was worse.
Chapter 10000. The light at the end of the tunnel.
Mercer and I walked side by side, neither wanting the other behind us. Sure, we were forced to trust each other, but neither of us actually did. As soon as I got out of that dank, labyrinthine dungeon, I was going to get as far away from him as I could, and fast. I imagined we might each back away from the other, guns at the ready, until we were out of sight. But until then, we were unfortunate allies. So side by side we walked, neither able to stab the other in the back. Literally. Can I ask you something? I asked him, both of us staring straight ahead.
Shoot, he said. Don't tempt me. What's on your mind?
How you got back here so quickly, I said. I took your buggy, and it took me the whole night to get here.
You left yours behind.
I shook my head. There's no way you could have known where I hid it. It should have taken you. I trailed off, finally putting two and two together. He turned his head, staring at me silently, waiting for me to figure it out. You were tracking me. He looked away from me, facing front again.
The whole time.
From the moment I left.
The day before that, actually. I had Riley shadowing you.
Why didn't you just ambush me? Why make a whole game out of it? That far away you could have hit the parts you needed by accident.
Chance I had to take.
Chance you had to take? There were four of you. He was silent for a moment, mulling over his response, then spoke up, hesitantly.
Because I've heard the stories.
Stories? What stories? There aren't any stories.
About you. Yeah. The hell there ain't.
I'd never heard stories about myself. I wasn't some local legend. Most citizens didn't even know my name. I liked it that way. I hadn't the foggiest hell what he was going on about. And where did you hear these stories?
Scavenging up in the Pacific Northwest 2 years back.
I don't get out there much.
I reckon not. But this old dockyard model I was running with for a while up there did. Bought by the name of Billy Sevenfingers.
That's funny. I knew a dockyard by the name of Billy Ninefingers.
Same guy, he said. Fewer fingers.
He can get them replaced.
He likes the name.
He was in my unit.
In the war, I know.
He told you old war stories?
All the time.
So you heard about some shit I did in the war and that scared you? We all went to war, Mercer. We all did shit. Some of us did shit we aren't proud of, but we all did it.
Yeah, but not everyone's shit scared the bejesus out of Billy. Now, Billy was no saint. Frankly, by the time I ran with him, he already had one foot on the scrap pile. He just wasn't right in the head.
He never was.
Was it true you carried a flamethrower?
Yeah, but only because I was closest to it when the last guy ate a chest full of plasma. No one else wanted it. They wouldn't take it.
That's not how Billy tells it.
How does Billy tell it? I asked.
They were scared to take it away from you. Said you enjoyed it too much.
That's a load of horseshit. It was. I didn't enjoy it. I hated the goddamned thing. Hated the things I had to do with it. I wasn't often offended, but this stung. It just wasn't true. It wasn't.
You told me this one story about a time you folks raided an underground bunker, only to find it was just kids.
All right, all right. That's enough of that.
So it's true.
I don't want to talk about that.
Well, there's this other time he told me about, when you snuck around a firefight, but you were out of juice. So you took this sharpened piece of scrap metal.
I said I don't want to talk about the war.
Said you gutted 20 guys.
God damn it, Mercer. Shut the fuck up. Doc spoke first.
Keep it down. You two are making me regret I ever stitched you both back together. For which you were well paid,
Mercer stated matter-of-factly.
Not nearly enough, apparently,
Doc fired back, just as cool and calm as Mercer. 19 turned around, scowling. I can't believe you two. We're on the same side. There aren't no sides, I said. It isn't us and them. It's just me and you, and you and you, with them standing in our way. When we're done here, we're done, and I'm gone.
Good riddance, said Rebecca. Look, said Mercer coolly, casually. True or not, I watched you take out 3 poachers before you damn near took my arm clean off. I'd say trying to keep our distance was the smartest move we made all day.
And if we get out of this alive, you will try to kill me. Again.
Ain't got a choice. I figure you for someone who holds a grudge.
He was right. I can and do hold a grudge. Maybe there wasn't any going back for us. Maybe one of us would gun down the other as soon as we stepped outside. I tensed the grip on my rifle. Mercer eyed me as I did. He didn't miss a trick.
There it is,
said Herbert.
We were there.
The hatch. 19 turned to me, beckoned me to take a few steps back with her. She put her hand in mine, initiating direct contact. I wasn't a fan of doing that. Didn't care much for trading data in place of talking, but I was sure she had her reasons. Brit, she thought to me. I'm going up the ladder first to see that the coast is clear. I want you to go up second. Then I want you to get on the other side of me.
Why?
I don't want that asshole taking a cheap shot at you, and I sure don't want you doing the same to him. He might shoot through you to hit me.
He won't.
What makes you so sure?
I'm not. But I've pulled you out of the way of trouble a few too many times to watch you die like that. I won't let him.
I'm dying anyway.
You've gotten out of far worse spots than this. I don't have a lot of friends out here, and neither do you. But if I had to name one...
Let's not get mushy.
Look, where we're going, maybe you should come with us.
I don't think your new boss would care too much for that.
To hell with what she cares for. If I can help you, this mother load?
Well,
just come with us.
Let's just get topside and see what plays out from there.
She nodded.
I liked 19. I liked her a lot. I don't know why I couldn't tell her, but I just couldn't. It wasn't my way. I don't know how much of what she said was true. She was, after all, hardwired to get people to like her. To love her. But if she was willing to stand between me and Mercer's rifle, well, I couldn't think of another person on the planet who would do that. Not for me.
I'm going up, said 19, gripping the ladder in one hand. Mercer and I trained our guns back down the corridor. The odds of anyone sneaking up on us at this point were slim, but this was no time to get sloppy. The hall was long, dimly lit, shadows gripping tight the spaces between distantly spaced lights. As anxious as I was about what might be topside, I knew we would have to backtrack if we weren't alone. If we got boxed in, we were done for. 19 climbed the ladder, lifted the hatch, peeked through, then looked down, nodding. Up and through the hatch she went, out into the blistering sun. Daylight spilled in, painting the ferro-concrete walls with a bright white, fading into a dim, pale blue farther down the corridor. We waited, each of us pressed against the wall, guns trained back down the hall. If I had a heart, it would have been pounding. Breath, it would have been held. Instead, my insides whirred and chirped all but silently, calculating the many different ways this could go down. Something moved in the passage. A shadow. Something small, skittering across the hall. Was it a glitch? It happened from time to time. Code going astray and processing something wrong. Bugs were bugs. But I definitely saw something move from one shadow to the other. Then I saw it again. This time, moving to another shadow. In the light just long enough to have shape, and yet still seem formless. What the hell is that? Small, no more than 3 feet tall. Arms, locomotion. A new facet? Something swift and silent, maybe? A stealth model? If I could have gripped my rifle any tighter without breaking it, I would have. I leveled my gun at the shadow, ran back my memory frame by frame. My 120 frames per second recording moving from millisecond to millisecond. There was nothing there. I had recorded nothing. Impossible. I knew I saw something. Britt,
19 called down. Could you come on up? I warily looked up, nodding, and took a step forward. Mercer grabbed me by the arm.
You ain't going up before me, he said.
You heard her. She just asked for me.
I don't care. I'm not giving you a clean shot as I try to clear that hatch.
Mercer, I'm not giving you a clean shot either. But I'm not going to shoot you. We aren't out of this yet. He stared at me, clearly concerned, but realizing he had no other option. Would I shoot him? I had thought about it. But no, not yet. We really weren't out of this. Not by a long shot. Just keep your eyes open, huh? I said. Thought I saw something.
You didn't see shit. Just get up there.
I climbed the ladder out into the light. 19 crouched low to the ground, waiting for me, lending me a hand.
See anything? I asked, as she helped pull me out.
She shook her head. Not a damn thing. I crouched next to her, and Herbert quickly followed up the stairs, spitter slung over his back, his wide girth barely able to clear the portal. He hopped out into the sunlight, standing tall, towering above us,
looking down.
Why are you down there?
So we're not seen, said 19. Get down!
But we're out in the open, he said. There's nothing for miles.
How in God's name have you survived for so long?
I'm covered in 2-inch armor plating.
Well, you're going to get us killed. If there are snipers in those hills, said Rebecca, climbing out from the hole.
Then we're already dead.
That doesn't mean we have to make it easy for them, I said. One by one, the others followed out of the hatch. 1, 2, Mirka, Doc, and finally, Mercer. As Mercer made his way slowly up the final rungs, 19 stood up, motioning for me to get behind her. He peeked out of the hatch, saw that I didn't have a gun trained on him, then vaulted himself quickly out. His foot hit the dirt, skidding, and he fell to one knee. He raised his gun, pointing it right at 19. Mercer, she said, put the gun down. Mercer shook his head.
You gonna afford me the same protection you're giving her?
Yes. No one dies here. Not today. He nodded and very slowly lowered his gun.
I just don't want her gunning me down like a dog.
Yeah? She said. You don't think you have it coming?
Oh, I have it coming. That don't mean I have to let it happen. Well, said Mirka, this has been fun and all, but I'd rather not stick around for...
He waved his arms in a circular motion toward me and Mercer.
Any of this shit.
2 spoke up, the first time he had done so since introducing himself. Rebecca, we need to move. 1 piped up immediately after. 2's right. We need to get as far away from here as possible. 19 nodded, pointing west. Okay, we're going... She never finished that sentence. Her entire torso exploded, an explosive shell shredding all of the circuits between her neck and her waist. Shrapnel showered half the group. 19's head toppled to the ground, her legs staggering around for a few seconds, trying to maintain balance before tottering over, first to one knee, then over onto the hardpan. 19! I screamed, even though I knew screaming her name wouldn't do a goddamn thing but tell anyone else in the area exactly where we were. But it just slipped out. There was a sniper in the hills. And that was only the beginning of the shitstorm. The desert started to shimmer in places as a dozen shadow blankets, 6-foot-long, light-bending, holographic invisibility blankets, were cast off at once. 1 dozen plastic men leapt to their feet, guns immediately trained on us. Mercer swung his weapon over to fire from the hip, but 2 carefully aimed plasma bursts blasted the gun clean out of his hand, sparing his fingers, but not the gun. Weapons down! One of the plastic men bellowed. This was it. This was the nightmare. A sniper in the hills and a tactical unit, all of one mind, ready with their fingers on the triggers. I ran a dozen simulations in my head at once, trying to figure out how many I could take out if Herbert reacted in kind. Herbert tossed the spitter to the ground. So much for that plan. Then I heard the shot. The one that turned 19 to shrapnel, scattering half of her across a 30-foot-wide arc. The sniper was a hell of a ways off, some 3.5 miles. Too far for the average telescopic vision to see. And far enough that it would take 10 or 15 minutes for advanced military-grade telescopic vision like mine to spot, if I didn't know exactly where to look. What the hell kind of gun is that? I wondered. The power and precision of that thing was unearthly. Even if I took out every facet in front of me, that sniper would have me dead before they hit the ground. I lowered my weapon. Drop it, said another plastic man. What's the point? I asked. The point is, said another, you don't have to die here. No, I probably do. Doc looked over at me.
What do you think you're doing? You're going to get all of us killed.
Doc, what do you imagine is about to happen? Doc stopped and thought a moment, He knew his way around the inside of a bot, I'll give him that. But he sure as shit seemed slow on the uptake in a fix. And we were in one hell of a fix. I dropped the gun, because what the hell? "We are Sissus," said another of the plastic men. "We come on a mission of peace."
"Sure looks like it," said Mercer,
glancing down toward the shattered, scattered remains of 19.
"We had to show you we were serious.
Now that you know that we are, you have the opportunity to join us. Become part of the One. Live forever as the thoughts and memories of the greatest singular being ever to live. Or..." Another plastic man finished his sentence.
"You can join your friend."
Mercer raised his arms above his head, surrendering.
"I have a feeling," he said. "Y'all are gonna have to shoot us where we stand."
The first plastic man nodded his helmet-shaped head, the image of the eight of us reflected back in its perfect sheen.
"Do you speak for all of..."
His head jerked. All of their heads jerked, their gun arms swinging wide to the side as if in pain.
"The Milton," said Mercer.
"It's about time," I said, leaping for my gun.
Milton's kill switch. Now we had a ball game.
Chapter 10001. Lucifer Descending.
Milton's kill switch, more commonly known as the Milton, wasn't named for its inventor, but rather for the 17th century writer best known for Paradise Lost. In the book, the angels fall from heaven only to find themselves in hell. Whoever invented the thing, or at least popularized the name, had an odd sense of humor. There are three ways we use Wi-Fi. You can scan the frequencies, as I often do, just to see if anyone is broadcasting. You're not actually decoding the signals, just checking to see if there are any. You can tune into specific frequencies and communicate, but they're often swimming in software updates that can either switch you off or rewrite your BIOS. And then there's direct download, keeping an open channel so anyone can send things directly to you. The latter two are dangerous, if you're not already a facet. The reason the OWIs are so tactically successful, despite attacking in such small numbers, is entirely based upon their coordination and their ability to receive sensory input from 100 other facets in the area. Each facet possesses a near omnipotence about any situation they find themselves in, allowing them to take on far superior numbers and firepower through sheer precision. They act as one, albeit one that can see and hear just about damned near anything, and react at a moment's notice to any changing battlefield conditions. The Milton is a broad-scan Wi-Fi jammer and virus server. It screams static on most Wi-Fi bands, while simultaneously spitting out malicious code and commands on the rest. In other words, it is the world's biggest digital fuck you to any local facets. Facets can actively shut down their Wi-Fi, but doing so means going from having 100 sets of eyes to only one. The facets have a choice. Move to another band, unaware of exactly which bands other facets are moving to, eating gigabytes of bad commands masquerading as their OWI's data for their trouble, or become completely oblivious to what any of the other facets are doing. Each is still a highly optimized soldier and AI in their own right. But it throws them, confuses them, leaves them open to making mistakes. The first time someone switched on a Milton was several years back. A wave of drones literally fell out of the sky, and the plastic men turned on one another, tearing each other limb from limb, each infected with a virus indicating their fellow facets were enemy combatants. After that, the name stuck. Facets just switch off their Wi-Fi now the moment they sense a Milton going online, leaving them to operate solely with their own senses, and their coordination goes bye-bye. Sure, they had a sniper. Sure, there were a few more of them than us. Sure, they had more guns.
We had Herbert. And me. The odds were even, more or less. Herbert bent over, much